YT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. Welcome to ABQ Connect. We have a very scientific way to decide what topics we're going to talk about on ABQ Connect, and I'll describe one for you. My daughter Abby, who you've all met and you've listened to her on the radio with me, she's one of our producers here at KLYT, along with our famous Steve Ryman, who brings us on the show today. Abby came into my office and said, "Dad, this is National Diabetes Month. I think we should talk about what it's like to live with diabetes." And, of course, Abby was diagnosed when she was 4 years old with type 1 diabetes. So I'm joined in studio by Abby's mom, Sandy Scripter. I'm her dad. And Abby.
Hey, what's up?
Welcome to ABQ Connect. Hey, and this is an important thing. And when you said this to me, Abby, I actually felt bad because I didn't actually know it was National Diabetes Month, and I have a daughter who's been a type 1 diabetic. Did you know it was National Diabetes Month, Sandy?
I did, only because it's on my calendar, though.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Because I force her to do that. I'm surprised you don't know, because World Diabetes Day, which is November 14th, always fell on State Week during high school. So we would always wear blue one of the days to kind of celebrate that. So I'm surprised you didn't know.
State Week for volleyball.
For volleyball. Sorry, I should specify.
Well,
yes.
And I know when you were celebrating it, but I think that, like most Americans, we're oblivious to the disease. We don't think about it. It's not top of mind. I mean, you've been very successful. I mean, a lot of people are going to have children, and I hate to say this, but there are a lot of people whose children are going to be diagnosed with diabetes. You were four, and I'm going to talk to your mom in just a minute about how she felt, and I'll, of course, tell you my feelings as well. People are terrified when that happens, like it's end of life. And so I want people to have hope that are listening, because you're a former All-State volleyball player. You graduated with honors from Hope Christian School and Point Loma Nazarene University. And most recently, you acquired your master's degree from, did I say this? I'm going to say this right, I hope. Dunleary Institute of Art, Design, and Technology in Ireland.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Abby, have you had difficulties with both high and low blood glucose levels in the last?
Well, my goodness. Let's start this off. Let's talk about last night, for instance, Dad. I woke up to a text from you saying, "Hey, are you all right?" Because you and Mom have my Dexcom numbers on your phones, which is really amazing. I mean, we're thankful for that technology, but at the same time, you know, it is scary for you guys because you guys get to see it. But yeah, I was low from what, like 3 a.m. till probably 7:30 a.m. And I drank milk. I drank, I had 2 cups of milk, and I just like would not come up. So yeah, definitely with the lows, especially out late at night. Then my high blood sugars as well. I mean, it's just frustrating, I think, for me, because I eat, like, my friends want to go out for pizza. They don't realize that pizza, I'm also a celiac, so I have to have gluten-free, but they don't realize the effects that can have. You know, yes, I can give me insulin for it, but that stays in my system for hours, and my blood sugar will literally be like a roller coaster.
And you mentioned celiac, and nutrition is really important. Celiac is an allergy to gluten, which, yep, of course, is in all wheat products and so forth. We're going to have Jennifer Bryant, who is well-known to our audience as well with Nourish Nutrition Counts. She's a certified diabetic educator. She's going to join us for the second half of the show. But I really wanted to get with you, Abby. I mean, it sounds odd to probably our listeners. They maybe have in their mind, gee, if you were a good dad, you would know everything your daughter's thinking about diabetes. And I just don't. Do you, Sandy?
No, not at all. And you know, the thing is if you see any of the commercials on TV or you're watching, it looks so simple. You know, you can test here and you can see your number and your number's perfect. It's really not that scientific. As much as we are using the technology to our advantage, the actual body does not necessarily always recognize it the same way. And so it's unpredictable and something that you have to manage long term.
I mentioned earlier, and Abby's mentioned it, that her mom and I can both see her blood glucose levels. Right now, while I'm talking to you on the radio, I can click on a little button and I can see your blood glucose level. I'll do that right now while I'm talking.
Oh,
and
scary.
Lo and behold, like, you're 80. It's supposed to be 100.
Hey, 80's pretty good.
So you're a little bit low. What if you were right now, at the gym and you started working out? What would happen?
Right. So, well, I think for me, compared to like a lot of the diabetics I have talked to, I think my diabetes is pretty unique in that I don't normally drop low while I'm working out. You know, every so often it would, like it happened a lot when I was playing volleyball, you know, both in high school and college. But, most of the time it happens hours afterward. So if I work out at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, I will drop low at like midnight while I'm sleeping. So it's very strange, but, yeah, I've talked to both my, endocrinologist and some diabetic educators about it, and they're like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do about this because it's such an after effect and we don't know why my body does that.
So you were a year in Ireland.
Yes.
And I'm going to talk to your mom about how she felt when you decided to go to Ireland. We're already laughing because it was nerve wracking, but here's the thing that I want to ask about Ireland. It seems that your blood glucose levels were more stable when you lived in Ireland. Why would you say that is?
Honestly, I wish I knew. I do think that the food over there, like it does play a part in that because obviously I was eating extremely healthy. They don't have as many gluten-free options there. So I really wasn't eating a lot of carbs while I was over there. So obviously that helps like kind of help out the blood sugar, especially because most of my diet was protein and that actually helps, you know, balance out and even
vegetables.
Out. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's protein, veggies, all that. So definitely that. But you know what the number one thing is it's because I walked everywhere. No matter what, like because I obviously can't drive over there and I would take the bus, you know, if I was going into actually like Dublin center, but for the most part, I walked everywhere in my little town called Shankill. So I think that helps a lot. So just diabetics who are listening, I mean, just like things like that, just physical activity in general, just really helps.
Want to remind our listeners, this is National Diabetes Month. You have World Diabetes Day on the 14th.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know if, is that a celebration or is it just an awareness? It's to bring this top of mind.
Yeah. So actually, I don't know. So it is National Diabetes Awareness Month. So there is awareness in there. So I think that's the goal of it. But for me, I mean, I've talked to you about it. Like I have a diabetic diagnosis day, which I call my diabetes birthday. And I've told my mom this too, like that day is more important to me than my actual birthday. So it's hard because I just think that I have a little bit of a celebration because I've had so many more obstacles than most people. And I know Dad, you and I have talked about this, but this is an often invisible disease. People are like, oh yeah, you're a diabetic, but they don't realize all the complications that come with that. I mean, simple as I remember me taking my ACT in high school. I was 400 when I was taking that. And that messes with your brain. It messes with how you feel. I felt so sick. I had to use the restroom and they don't let you like leave the room. So just something as simple as that. Like, so I'm personally celebrating it more as like how far I've come and what I've accomplished with all these obstacles.
Sandra, let's get to the emotions of this. How did you feel when Abby was first diagnosed with diabetes?
You know, I think the instant, especially Abby is number 4 out of 5. Mm-hmm. So you're unfamiliar with it and they are pelting you. It's like drinking water through a fire hose. What am I supposed to know? How do I handle this? What are my responsibilities? And underneath all of it, as a parent, you wish that it could be you that's managing it and dealing with it and not your child. And there's such a prevalence in this particular time of young children being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And it changes everything. However, I will say with that being said, I think that it is a lot easier for Abby to have undertaken the changes that a diabetic child needs to make at 4 so that it was part of her fabric growing up than those that are diagnosed at 18 when they've lived a completely normal life, eating the way they want to eat, exercising the way they want to exercise. So to some degree, I think the difficulty in the transition for parents and children has to do with how far you're into the rhythm of your life.
I thought it was my fault because I had wanted her to drink cranberry juice And what I ended up finding out, and we'll talk to Jennifer in the second half hour today about this, is Ocean Spray cranberry juice. Not picking on Ocean Spray, but all juices, apple juice, orange juice, they have as much sugar as soft drinks. So ultimately, those weren't very good for Abby. And there was this period where I remember you had been out of town for a few days. I had taken her to the doctor before you had left. We had gone together, and she had, they thought she had a urinary tract infection. They thought, and I don't know why they think that when she was four, but Abby was our first of five children to be potty trained. She hated going to the bathroom in her pants. She was absolutely, she had to be like 8 months old and she was potty trained. It was amazing. And then all of a sudden around four, she ends up wetting her bed. And ultimately, I don't know how it happened, but nothing was happening. And I think you Googled the symptoms and you said, this is every symptom that I'm reading here is diabetes. So I took her to the emergency room. And she ended up being over 600 blood glucose level.
I think I was about 800.
And your A1C was over 12 at that point. A normal A1C would be between 5.5 and 6.
So A1C is the number of sugar molecules or glucose molecules that are attached to your red blood cells.
On the outside.
Yeah. And that actually is what ends up causing blindness and fine blood vessels and loss of feeling organs in your fingers and your toes and all of that. So this all really ties into together. And I hope our listeners are interested in this because right now we're talking a little bit about type 1. And Abby, before we take a break, tell us what the differences may be between type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
Right, yeah. So type 1 used to be known as juvenile. So most of the time it happened when you were either born or when you were a kid. And a lot of the time type 2 is kind of developed once you're older. But type one is an autoimmune. So basically your body thinks your islet cells, which are the cells that carry the insulin, are foreign invaders and they get attacked. So even though we're technically kind of producing insulin, the insulin never is able to be used because our body attacks it right away. Whereas, type two is more of kind of an overworked pancreas and, you just are more resistant to insulin. So your body still produces insulin, but can't use it because your body is resisting it. And type 2 can actually end up in type 1 if you keep overworking your pancreas and end up actually just being able to not produce insulin at all.
I don't think this is as much a thing for Abby as it was when I was growing up. But when your mom and I were growing up, there were commercials on TV for smoking, for cigarettes. You remember those commercials? Mm-hmm. You know, the Marlboros, and you had the Marlboro man walking around puffing on a cigarette. Well, now that's all illegal. Well, the reason I bring that up is I had several friends that I graduated high school with that were big smokers. And they developed that voice, the smoker's voice. And they had to, you know, I mean, they were destroying their vocal cords and everything else. And the funny thing was, is both of the people I have in mind ended up with heart attacks because of all the smoking. They'd smoke 3 or 4 packs a day. And even after having open heart surgery, they were still smoking. Well, here's why I bring this up. Type 2 diabetics, a large percentage can be cured if you just eat correctly. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about that in the second half hour. And that's what's so shocking to me. Abby, you would do whatever it would take if you could be cured from type 1, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Literally, I say this kind of on a daily basis, because I think a lot of my friends, at least, like, they're like, oh, my favorite little diabetic. And like when I meet other diabetics, we're like, oh, diabesties. But the reality is this. I hate diabetes and I would give anything or do anything to not have it anymore, because I think I could do a lot more without it. But I'm just very proud of the fact that so many of us do live with it and still accomplish everything that everyone else is accomplishing. So.
Amen. When we come back, I'm going to ask Sandy how she felt when Abby decided to move to Ireland to do her master's degree. We'll be back, and I hope you'll stay with us. Very emotional subject, talking about type 1 and type 2 diabetes. I hope it's helpful. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mateo. I was thinking about killing myself. My school sent someone over to talk to me. They called it an assessment. If I wasn't around then, my mom wouldn't have to get food for me. She could just worry about my sister and my little brother, and not me. We're just always hungry. Will you stand for me?
One in four children in New Mexico aren't sure where their next meal will come from. And this Thanksgiving, thousands of children right here in our community may not have a Thanksgiving meal at all. This year, Feed NM Kids aims to provide Thanksgiving dinner to over 2,000 food insecure children and their families. A donation of just $50 feeds a family of four. You can donate now at feednmkids.com/food drive.
I'm Pastor Scott Tom, host of the Bible Answer program, No Other Doctrine. We have a college to train you for ministry. You can train at ccfcollege.com, but every 2 years, I personally train up 50 men. It is low cost and only one night a week. It starts in August. Men, get more info at crossfellowship.org. That's crossfellowship.org or call 990-7588.
Have you ever dreamt of a career in radio? Do you have a passion to serve Jesus? Well, at KLYT, we're looking to hire a few part-time board operator positions, and you could be the candidate we're looking for. As we return to normal, our need for help has only increased. Whether engineering live services from Calvary Church, assisting with production, or being involved with events, this could be your opportunity to serve in ministry, while also getting on-the-job training in radio. Shoot us your resume online at calvarynm.church/jobs.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect.
Abby Williams is in studio with us today on ABQ Connect. She's my daughter. She's also one of the producers here at KLYT, recently got back from Ireland. Her mom, Sandy Scripter, is with us too. Sandy, I wanted to ask you how you felt when Abby moved away. I mean, she went to college in California, but she had two of her brothers.
Yeah, every time she basically left home for a college experience, she had somebody that I was connected to that I could get a hold of to verify that everything was going okay, and that when I couldn't reach her, that she was indeed not having a diabetic issue. So sending her to Ireland had a very different feeling to it. And just to give you a little, I know you know it, but the listeners don't, a background to this is that because it's not very predictable, it's stressful for those of us who are watching the numbers come and go and up and down. And so if she's low overnight, then we're awake until she gets higher.
And again, Sandy and I are getting notified what Abby's blood glucose is. I'm going to ask Abby later how she feels about us kind of spying on her 24/7, because that's really what we're doing.
I should also point out, so that they know, Abby does not wake up when she's low, which I think is where most of the fear actually stems from.
So that's exactly what I was just going to say. She is a very sound sleeper, and she sleeps through her diabetic lows. And I think most of the population does not understand what a diabetic low is. There's too much insulin in the system, and it drives basically all of the sugar out of the bloodstream and into the cells that need to use it, leaving not enough sugar, if there's too much insulin, for the brain to operate. So the brain starts shutting things down. A diabetic low is an immediate danger. You have a very small window until there's complications with brain activity and all kinds of things. So overnight becomes a real stressful situation in a diabetic low. A diabetic high, on the other hand, can last for a longer time. It does internal issues if you let it run high, but it's not, I've got to fix this right now or we're going to have problems. Diabetic lows are the immediate problem. And so with Abby sleeping overnight, when we talked about her going to Ireland, I basically told her I don't have anybody there. And so God brought us into a family of people that were running a church there, and she hooked up with some of the people in that place, and they became my contact for her time during Ireland.
Yeah,
and did you have to call? I didn't know you had to call them.
I did.
I mean, I saw some lows.
Just a couple times. Yeah. But the good thing about Ireland, Dad, is that it was a 7-hour difference. So Mom was
2 o'clock in the afternoon
when I was sleeping. So that was a blessing.
That was.
Yeah. So she didn't have to wake up in the middle of the night in a panic.
So here's a question. We're mentioning a bunch of cool technologies that have given us a little peace of mind. How has it been dealing with the insurance companies and the providers of diabetic supplies?
She's literally just laughing, Dad. She literally tells me, Abby, I need to train you for this because it is just ridiculous.
I actually have had a doctor, her endocrinologist, the insurance company, and the diabetic supply provider all on the phone, pretty much raising my voice and asking the question, who in this can stop pointing fingers and advocate for my child? The patient, the one that's impacted by the fact that you're not delivering, or you didn't give them a pre-authorization, or you didn't get the prescription turned in. Whatever it is, she's the one that suffers. And it is ongoing every single month. There is no, there's no break in it. The system is broken.
Yep.
And I've told her, I think that I have yelled this fairly close to the top of my lungs, but it's, how do I teach? I can't teach my daughter to sit on the phone for 3 hours and wait until somebody answers the phone.
Yeah.
I don't know how you teach them to work the system. I'm old.
So people need to understand, I mean, this is not just Obamacare. You know, Obamacare started, 12, 13 years ago. We're talking about a young woman who is now 23 and was 4 when she was diagnosed. So this was pre-Obamacare, through Obamacare, and it's not really getting any better.
It's not getting any better. That's correct. And we are working to make sure that she knows how to connect all the different parts of her prescriptions and her things that she needs. But it takes a lot of time on a monthly basis, and it's very expensive.
Yeah. It's very expensive. And the one thing that's nice, I think, about, first of all, and maybe I'll make all of my conservative Republican friends mad, but I kind of like the idea that everybody should have health insurance. I like that idea. I think it's a good idea. I think they might be doing a better job of it in Europe, Abby, than they might be doing it here. Now, I don't want to get into a political statement, but I want to say is I'm eternally grateful that Abby's on your insurance. It's a good insurance, but there is a fight, and there is right. something that you have to constantly advocate for. The technology is really cool. Abby, when you were 4, you were taking shots with a syringe. Yep. And you actually learned when you were 4 to do that because you wanted to do it. That was the kind of person you
were. I still to this day have the bear that I was given in the hospital at 4 years old that basically has little patches all over him where you can actually practice shots. So while other kids are having play dates, I was having a play date with a bear learning how to use a syringe.
Well, and then you went on to a pump that looked like a pager.
Yep.
And it had a tube and a cannula that you had to insert about every 3 days. Abby, and then now you are on a different pump that they attach and then they talk.
Yep. So it's called the Omnipod. Mm-hmm. I have the PDM that controls it. It is wireless. So as someone who's very active, it's very useful. I don't have to take the pump off while I play volleyball or while I'm working out at the gym. So that's
okay.
Useful.
What would your body look like right now if you had every pump, every Omnipod attached to your body right now in a photo? What would your body look like for the last 12 months?
Yep. So my dad is getting this from an Instagram post I actually saw. Basically, a woman had posted a picture of her with all her pump sites and her Dexcoms on her for a straight week. I'm going to be honest, all of that couldn't even fit on my body for a year. There is no way. I changed my Omnipod every 3 days, and I changed my Dexcom every 10 days. So I don't know if you want to do the math, but my body would be just completely covered. And that's kind of an issue.
It's kind of a pincushion.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Because it does leave a little bit of scarring and that kind of
thing. Well, it's basically a fun game to play. Like, okay, where can I put my site on now that doesn't have scar tissue under it? You know, like I have to, it's a puzzle. Like I have to navigate everything so everything heals properly. And like if I do put it somewhere with some scar tissue underneath, then I'm not going to get the insulin in my body that I need. So it's a fun time.
It's not a
glamorous disease to live with.
Type 1 diabetes, again, is where you don't have islet cells to carry insulin to the cells in the body to use it. So if you ingest a bunch of glucose, you're not able to use it in your body. It builds up in your bloodstream. You end up with high blood glucose levels. if you, as Sandy mentioned earlier, the lows are more dangerous where you don't have enough blood glucose, your brain's used all that it can, and then it gets really scary. Type 2 diabetes is different. Insulin is still produced. You still have islet cells, but largely your body's developed a resistance to it. And again, you end up with the same highs and lows, but maybe not quite as volatile. And it really is a silent thing because a lot of people, the data suggests, don't even know they have type 2, right, Abby?
I think that was the biggest statistic that I found. It said that 88 million American adults have prediabetes, but a lot of them actually don't know that they have it. Like, some are undiagnosed, and I'm like, that is crazy to me.
Yeah, and it's very dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
Very dangerous. Give us some hope. Sandy, can you give parents that have children that have been diagnosed with type 1 or even adults that have been diagnosed with type 2, can you give them some help, some hope about, can they live a good life, a productive life?
So the really good news for the most part is that if you follow a regimen and you are under the care of an endocrinologist and you are intentional about your care and monitoring your blood glucose, you can have 100% normal life. If you're wanting to have children, I mean, that's all within the scope. The management of it is really where it comes into play.
Yeah, and it's a different thing. Hey, I want to ask you about a fun thing, because nothing we've talked about here is particularly fun. But
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm having a blast.
I think this part of it is fun. You and I just learned about this here maybe 2 months ago. Sandy is famous for making delicious banana bread and carrot cake, and you two have experimented with gluten-free flours and different things, and you've come up with a recipe that I tried, and I could not tell it was gluten-free.
Well, I also need to preface this. So because diabetes is an autoimmune disease, it's very common to also develop other autoimmune diseases. So I was actually 18 when I was diagnosed with celiac, so I have not had it my entire life. So I literally, as soon as I went to college, they were like, hey, have fun trying to figure out a whole new diet at a new campus, all this fun stuff.
And that is common to type 2 diabetics, is to develop celiac.
There's a connection.
Type 1.
Type 1.
Yeah,
type
I'm
one.
Actually not sure about type 2, but type 1 for sure because it's autoimmune. So yeah, my mom and I, you know, a lot of people, it's a misconception. They're like, oh, you can't have sweets because you're a diabetic, which is just not true. Again, it's all about management. I can eat it as long as I give myself insulin. So my mom and I, she's the master. Just take it away, Sandra. You are the master.
You know, I was going to tell you, there's one big secret, and it took us a lot of failures.
Yeah.
Heavy breads and various things. When you're baking, specifically like banana breads and carrot cakes, if you will split, they've got gluten-free flour that's one-to-one baking flour. It's the best thing.
Is that
but
like
it's
an
granular.
Almond
flour? It's a
more granular, and it looks like regular flour.
Yeah.
However, if you use it 100%, the one-to-one baking, it makes it grainy. So what we did is we substituted almond flour, which has the moisture in it, and it makes it almost perfect.
So I mean, kind of split it?
We did. If a recipe calls for 2 cups of flour, you do 1 cup of one-to-one, and then you do 1 cup of the almond flour, and the mixture makes it about the right thing, at least for baking.
Let me just say this. My mom made this for my sister's baby shower, and some of her friends still ask about the carrot cake, and they had no idea it was gluten-free. No idea.
Yeah, and it really was. I mean, I testify. I tasted it, the banana bread, and it was just terrific. And I've experimented with trying to bake things for Abby, and other people I know have tried, and it hasn't tasted great.
It's all about texture. It's not even taste. I think gluten-free things just tend to have a weird texture to it. It's either really chewy or really like a chip. And
I do want to make a recommendation, and I hope nobody will be offended by this, but I love to go to Village Pizza and have their cauliflower crust pizza because it's totally gluten-free and it gets really crispy.
It's really good.
It's nice.
Yeah.
It's
really,
awesome.
Really, really yummy.
And I'm sure there's others, and I hope to spend a little time finding those out. Hey, guys, I'm sorry, but we're out of time for this segment of ABQ Connect. Sandy, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with Jennifer Bryant and Abby Williams right after these messages. Thank you.
The largest investment for a family is their home. For decades, Carlos Griego and the team at Bosque Home Services has been taking care of houses. Now, here is Carlos talking with Jim Williams about some of the most common issues homeowners need to know about.
You made a statement to me in prior shows about how efficient a swamp cooler is compared to refrigerated air. I think the analysis was 20 degrees lower than the temperature outside.
That's one of the best swamp coolers in the world. We'll get you a 20 degree.
So if it's 100 outside, you're going to still be 80 in your house, even if your swamp cooler is working ideally.
Right, but it's the process of evaporation, so it feels a lot cooler than you think it is. There's a thing called temperature, and then there's a thing called sensible temperature.
Bosque Home Services, online at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200. That's HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200.
Coming to your city this holiday season, it's Wren Collective on the Jolly Irish Christmas Extravaganza Tour. Get ready for a fun night of Christmas cheer with Wren Collective, the Jolly Irish Christmas Extravaganza, live at Calvary Church in Albuquerque, New Mexico on Friday, December 3rd. That's Wren Collective, live in Albuquerque on Friday, December 3rd. For more information, visit transparentproductions.com.
KLYT thanks Allocate Ministries for partnering with the Light of New Mexico.
Hey, West Side, Pastor Drew here. If you are looking for a small church community plus world-class Bible teaching, I want to invite you to Calvary Church Westside. We're a family-focused Bible teaching church at Cores Montano. Calvary Church Westside, where church is family.
The KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect would like to thank Essenmacher Family Dental for their support of KLYT, with services including children's dentistry, preventive dentistry, and more. Their new Albuquerque office is located at 8310 Palomas Avenue Northeast, Suite C, 505-372-0086, or online at snmacherdental.com. I always say this when Jennifer Bryant joins the show, can't talk. Jennifer, I love talking to you because it always, food is just something I like, and I appreciate you spending time with us today on ABQ Connect.
Jim, I like food too.
I know. And you're always teaching us that it should be friendly and fun. I don't know if you heard the end of my interview with Abby's mom and Sandy and Abby, but they've come up with a recipe too that I like, one for banana bread and one for carrot cake that is gluten free. And again, that is part of being a type 1 diabetic. In a lot of cases, you develop celiac disease, which is an allergy to gluten. So we might have to add that to the Nourish Nutrition Counseling website.
I would love to.
I'm sure
actually.
My mom is happy to share.
Yeah. Hey. I was just going to say, I'm going to have to get my hands on that recipe.
Oh, heck yeah. I will send it to you.
That's right. Abby, read some of the startling statistics you have put together in your research, and then I want to get to Jennifer about type 2 and how it's curable and things that she recommends for eating habits.
Okay, yeah, of course. So the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, their 2020 study actually showed that 34.2 million people in the U.S. were living with diagnosed or undiagnosed diabetes in 2018. So that's kind of a little bit over 1 in 10 people, and 95% of those actually have type 2 diabetes. So, I mean, people like me, we only make up about 5% of diabetics with type 1. So, and then I also saw that 88 million American adults, so 1 in 3, have pre-diabetes. So those are just some of the statistics that I found just coming into this interview.
Jennifer, you've told us on past programs that type 2 diabetes largely is curable.
Yeah, and actually, Abby, I'm glad you shared that pre-diabetes statistic, because there is a lot of good evidence that if we catch it early, it is completely reversible, or at least we can delay the onset of type 2 diabetes really significantly. And so, you know, I think it's kind of our tendency as humans to just sort of avoid it or not get tested because we're afraid that if we you know, get the result and we have prediabetes, we're going to actually have to do something about it. But this is really the wrong way of thinking, because if we catch it early, there's really so much you can do. And, you know, of course, it does require some changes in your eating habits and in your lifestyle habits. But I don't know, to me, it's just so worth, you know, catching it early and making an effort to make some of those changes.
Jennifer, I made an analogy in our first segment that, I was frustrated with friends of mine that I really loved that wouldn't stop smoking. They had open heart surgery and they wouldn't stop smoking. And both of the people that I mentioned in the first segment are dead. I'm 63 years old. They died around 50, and all they had to do was stop smoking.
Yeah.
Do a lot of people that have type 2 diabetes just need to make an adjustment in what they eat and they would be cured?
Well, yes and no. And I always say this, that eating habits are just so much more than, you know, following a certain set of guidelines or making certain choices. But food is really connected to, you know, our culture, to our emotional health, to maybe memories, to emotions, all of it. And so when we say, well, just change what you eat, it's actually a lot more complicated than, you know, just making a change. And I think that's why I have a job.
Yeah.
Because it is challenging for sure.
Well, and so some other things that are complications, and you can talk about this, Abby, if you want, is whenever your blood glucose is going crazy, you also end up with digestive issues and other complications. Irritable bowel is common among diabetics. And Jennifer, I know you work with Abby a little bit to help her identify foods that may be, not only were, you know, you weren't letting her drink Cokes and all that kind of stuff, but you also were adjusting some of the other things that might be an irritant to her system.
Well, and that's just evidence that every single system in our body works together, right? And so what you see is when you work on, you know, creating a healthy gut environment, so healthy digestion, then what you see is you see the effects of that, the gut health, and it spills over into the health of the metabolic system as well, which would be kind of the arena where we would put diabetes. And so when you have a healthy gut, then your diabetes is a lot easier to control. And so, and vice versa, when your diabetes is controlled, your gut health is healthier. And, you know, that's just two examples, but the same is true with heart health and, you know, immune system and brain health. And there's so many systems that really go together. That it's not just, you know, we're not just focusing on one thing when we talk about dietary changes. We're really looking at the complete health of the whole body.
Jennifer, how would someone find out if they're pre-diabetic or diabetic?
Yeah, so I think this is getting better, but your yearly visits to your primary care doctor are definitely the place to be screened for that. And most primary care doctors are testing what we call a fasting blood glucose. And so that's a good place to kind of start. But I actually think we should be a little more proactive, and we should be asking also for the hemoglobin A1C test, which is a little bit better picture of overall what's happening with the blood sugars. If we just focus on the fasting blood sugar, a lot of times there's some damage that's already been done. And what I mean by that is, we often see the blood sugars right after meals going up sooner with prediabetes than the fasting. So if you just go in and you get your fasting blood sugar tested, it looks fine maybe, but after your meals, your blood sugar might be going up much too high. And so that hemoglobin A1C test is actually going to give us a good picture of both of those areas.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ab.
So I actually have a question, because I genuinely don't know, Jennifer, but do pre-diabetics not have similar symptoms to even diabetics? So are they not feeling this slight increase in thirst or urination, or just not feeling good in general?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I would say it really depends on the person. And also with prediabetes specifically, the blood sugars often aren't high enough where you get really intense symptoms, like maybe you experience, Abby, when your blood sugars are high, but you're not getting intense thirst or, you know, that frequency to urinate is not that much different than normal. And so often people just don't notice their symptoms. And so that's why the testing becomes so important. And that's why, you know, I think you mentioned, I can't remember the exact statistic, but there's so many people that have prediabetes that just don't even know it. I think it's something like 80 something percent. So that's why it's so important to get tested and screened.
Jennifer, do you have clients, type 1, type 2, that are just so tired, exhausted from living with diabetes that they start to stop taking care of themselves?
Yes.
This is unfortunately, a funny question. I could answer.
Yes. I feel like Abby probably should answer this better than me. But, you know, what I see from, you know, like a support system for people with diabetes is, you know, it's a disease that you literally have to think about every single day, and not even just every single day, but it is multiple times a day, right? If we think about how often we eat or how often, you know, somebody with diabetes is checking their blood sugar, it's just, it's a consuming disease. It's very time consuming. It's energy consuming, all of it. And so, yeah, it gets very tiring. You know, and Abby, I don't know, I'll just share one thing with working with Abby since we were talking about that, but we made one really simple fix that, you know, it didn't seem like a big deal, you know, where she started being really careful with taking her insulin before she was going to eat instead of taking it later and sort of trying to play catch up. And that one small change really made a difference. And that's really what I find. If we can make those small manageable changes that don't seem overwhelming, that's when people can really get a handle on this disease, and it makes it seem much less daunting.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Jennifer. And it's just funny because I, earlier on with my mom and my dad, I both just openly admitted I hate diabetes. And I think that a lot of diabetics probably share in that. I mean, it really does just come in on all aspects of your life. There's not one part of my life that it doesn't affect in one way or another. So I think with that comes this like almost stubbornness where I'm like, you know what? I hate this disease, so I don't want to take care of it. Like, I just want to pretend that it's not there. So I think I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels that.
No.
But yeah, so that's why I was just laughing. I was like, oh yeah, that totally is a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I see that frustration, but I don't just see that in diabetics. I mean, I know a lot of people who are like, you know, workout fanatics. They'll work out till they're 50 years old. Then they feel a few pains and different stuff. And like me, you can't do some of the things that you used to be able to do. And so you get frustrated. And so you don't work out as more, but then you end up paying a price when you stop that regimen. And, you know, in the midst of all of this, what's the Christian worldview about this, Jennifer? I mean, what is God doing with people that are diabetics? What's he teaching? I'll have Abby comment on that as well.
Yeah, well, and I think this is actually, we can expand this to even more than, you know, diabetes. I mean, all of us, we have, as we get older, our bodies start failing, right? We have aches and pains. We have serious conditions where, you know, they really affect our life, where we don't get to do what we want to do. And we have to, you know, we have to deal with these physical ailments. And, you know, that's simply a result of a fallen world, right? And so I think keeping that into perspective, right? And then I think there's such a hope and such a joy in taking that Christian perspective and realizing that this life on earth is but a breath, right? Like, this is not where we're going to be forever. And so I think, you know, keeping sort of that eternal perspective, I think, can be really helpful in the day-to-day frustrations of, you know, diabetes or whatever disease, you know, you're struggling with. Or whatever pain you're struggling with. A chronic pain is another really, really big thing that I've been Seeing a lot more in some of my clients. So, you know, and this is, I love this verse. I say this every time I'm on, but I think Galatians 5, 22 and 23 just gives us a really good, you know, kind of, motivation and where we need to be thinking about these things and having those fruits of the Spirit creeping into our attitudes, even about, you know, the ailments in our body. So having joy, having patience, right? So like Abby can comment on this too, you know, your blood sugars may not always be awesome, but being patient with yourself and working towards improvement, I think it's a really good attitude. Mm-hmm. But I think our faith can really, really help keep us motivated.
I'm going to go ahead and have Abby read that verse for us.
Okay, so it says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law.
Well, and I know that God has, in every trial that he takes us through, he has something to teach us, something that's going to grow us and conform him to be more like Christ. It's a pleasure to have Jennifer Bryant. She is the owner of Nourish Nutrition Counseling on the phone. She's also in addition to being a dietitian nutritionist, she's also a certified diabetic educator. And Abby Williams, my daughter, producer here at KLYT. And we've talked about her accomplishments and some of the challenges she's had since she was four. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jennifer about what healthy eating looks like for both diabetics and people that are not diabetics. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Men, do you desire to study the deeper things of God? Cross Christian Fellowship College goes in-depth in apologetics, teaching, and doctrines. Study the difference between Calvinism and Arminianism, views of the rapture, eisegesis, and exegesis. This special mentorship-style college is low-cost and only one night a week. Get information online at crossfellowship.org. That's crossfellowship.org.
Saturday nights at 8 and Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. The new show, Tracks of Light.
Get your eyes, see another world.
We trace back where we got on track with the light of Christ. Tracks of Light, locally sponsored by theplaceilike.com.
The most important information anyone can receive comes from an understanding of the Bible. Only here do we find direct revelation about all things related to life and relationship with God. Life does not always provide us with time or opportunity to break away and study the Bible full time. That's why KLYT is dedicated to presenting round-the-clock teaching by some of the best communicators we can find about Scripture and how it relates to our lives. We need to be exposed to the full counsel of God's Word. KLYT presents the Bible School of the Air. Each Saturday, starting at 12, KLYT will present through the Bible verse-by-verse teachings by Chuck Smith, Skip Heitzig, and Chuck Missler, followed by a question-and-answer session with Scott Richards. Drop into our Bible journey at any time and go through the entire Word of God with us. The KLYT Bible School of the Air. To wish is free. The rewards are eternal. Saturdays at 12 on 88.3 FM.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Nutritionist and diabetic educator Jennifer Bryant on the phone with us this afternoon. In studio with me is Abby Williams. She's a producer here at KLYT. And we appreciate you both being with us. We're talking about type 1 and type 2 diabetes and living with diabetes. It is a big challenge. But I want to ask Jennifer now, what is healthy eating? Does it look that much different for a diabetic than it does for someone who doesn't have diabetes? Do I still have Jennifer?
Oh, here we are.
There you go. Did you hear me, Jennifer?
Jennifer, I couldn't hear the first part.
Okay, let me ask one more time. When you look at is healthy eating that much different for someone that has diabetes than someone who does not?
I would say definitely not, and I think this is one area we've really grown in. Hopefully, there are still some medical providers who follow some old school advice, but I love what Abby said earlier about how, you know, she can eat sugar and it's fine. She just kind of has to plan for it. And with type 1, of course, you have to give yourself insulin for that decision. But I think that's kind of, that's like the old school thinking is like diabetics can't have any sugar. And, you know, there's all these like really harsh rules. And now what we're really trying to focus on is, okay, let's help people, you know, eat healthy, but let's help it be fun and let's help it be not restrictive. That's really a big thing right now too. We keep finding that the more restrictive we are, the more harmful it is to overall mental health, weight even. There's evidence that when we restrict what we're eating, it actually makes us eat more. And so, you know, there's this whole, like, we go on diets and then we gain weight and it's just, you know, it's out of control. And so I think there's really a good focus right now of trying to make all foods fit within reason, you know, and planning for it and being smart about it. So I think that that can be true with anyone that has diabetes.
You know, Paul says something about this in Romans 7. In verse 8, he says, "But sin, taking opportunity through the commandment, produced in me the coveting of every kind, for apart from the law, sin is dead." So he's saying, yeah, rules or the law, I guess in this case we could talk about the Ten Commandments being the law, actually sin took opportunity through the commandment, and it, the rule, if you will, made him actually want what he was told he couldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called the law of sin and death. And so I think that's kind of a similar thing to what you're talking about. As soon as we make a rule for ourselves. So Jennifer, how do you change the way we think about food? How does healthy eating become a lifestyle instead of a diet?
Yeah, that's a good, that's a great question. I think what, there's a couple of questions we have to ask ourselves. So we have to ask ourselves, okay, what foods, do I, you know, we'd make this assessment. What foods are in my diet that I know are not helpful for my goals? Am I willing to either reduce or cut those out? And if not, that's okay. That's exactly what we were talking about before, is if there's a food that you really want to include, then let's make that work, because we want this to be something that we can do long term. And then changing your attitude about it too, I think, is so important. So rather than, you know, thinking of it as something, oh my goodness, I have to do this every single day, switching that perspective and finding joy in taking care of your body, right? I say that all the time. That's kind of like my mantra. Like, let's not go on a diet. Let's find joy in feeding our bodies well and nourishing them well so that we can do all the things that we want to do in life. And so I think it's perspective, and then I think it's an honest assessment of where you're at and what you're willing to change.
This is going to sound silly, but maybe I think it's true in my case. I've teased many times that I feel like I'm a chipaholic, eating chips all the time. But I'm eating chips less and less and less because I've almost developed a lack of interest in them. And I think it's largely because I'm not pounding a lot of carbs and I'm not eating a lot of sugar, and that desire to eat, that's kind of been removed.
And that slow progression, that slow change is really, I think, what makes people successful long term. And so if you can just make a couple of small changes and then continue building on those, that's where you're really going to see progress long term. And so, you know, I think rather than trying to follow a super strict diet, doing that simple assessment, and I love to just tell people, start with vegetables. How many vegetables are you eating a day? And let's try to gradually increase that a little bit. One of the best ways to keep blood sugars down is to eat the non-starchy vegetables, which is most of the vegetables, right? Except for potatoes, corn, peas, and squash. But eating those non-starchy vegetables before your meals. And so I heard it, I had a really fun continuing education class this week, earlier this week, and the doctor who was teaching it was saying, you know, I tell all of my clients to go on a cereal bowl diet. And I was like, well, that's weird. Why would we be eating cereal all the time? Well, that's not what he was talking about. What he does is he encourages all of his patients to eat a cereal bowl size of vegetables before every single meal. And I thought, wow, that's a great little tip. And so that helps so much to keep those blood sugars from spiking and then dropping again. Those non-starchy vegetables seem to be a good way to keep them more steady and more stable.
Jennifer, you've pointed out that there's emotions as part of eating. And Abby, there's an emotional component to your type 1 diabetes. So you mentioned this in the first segment when we were talking with your mom. Why is the anniversary of your diagnosis when you were 4 years old so important?
I think it's just, it's kind of complicated. I don't know, because obviously I didn't choose diabetes. It kind of feels like obviously God chose me for this. And I think I'm 23 years old and still kind of trying to figure out why he did that. But then I've also had certain circumstances where this happened to me a ton when I was living in San Diego, but I would have little girls come up to me at the grocery store and see the Omnipod on my leg and be like, hey, I have one of those. And her mom is just like, oh, that's so cute. Like, can you just talk to her for a second? I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, I love doing that. So I just think that diabetes, as much as I hate the actual disease, it's offered me a perspective and a community that I would not have, you know, without it. So I think that my diabetes diagnosis day is super important to me because, again, I've also talked about overcoming obstacles that people don't know I have. I mean, I'll be working out at the gym, and, yeah, people might feel sick from lifting a lot, but I'm over here and my blood sugar's 50 and dropping because I'm seeing double. I'm getting really dizzy. I feel like I'm going to pass out. Or, like I said, I'll be taking a test and my blood sugar is really high and I don't feel good. And just certain things, even at work, you know, people don't realize this, but I'll be in my office drinking juice. You know, I'm literally 23 years old with a juice box and I'm just enjoying it. So it's just like, there's just little things that I think I'm just very proud of as a diabetic because people don't realize I'm living with it. And yeah, they see the Dexcom on my arm or the Omnipod on my leg. And a lot of people don't ask me about it, but they just stare at it. And so it's just little things like that where I'm just like, okay, Abby, like, yes, this sucks, but at the same time, you've overcome so much.
We're nearing the end of the show, so I want to ask you both this question. I'm going to ask Jennifer to go first. Jennifer, do you trust the information available through ongoing research? And the reason I ask you if you question that research is because companies are making huge profits selling products treating diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Really good question. I think a short and sweet answer would be if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And also if it goes against everything else you've ever heard, it's probably not correct either. So I think it's important to check our sources, make sure that we are following trusted sources, not just, you know, I think people are getting a lot of advice on social media lately, and there are some great, wonderful, credentialed people on there. I'm on there, but I think it can be really dangerous to fall into following someone who maybe is not giving 100% accurate information.
Do you both think and hope for a cure for diabetes?
Yes.
Not to be rude, Dad, that's a dumb question. Obviously, we want a cure. But I think it's like you said, like there's obviously such financial stake for a lot of pharmaceutical companies. They make so much money off of us. And I'm not insinuating anything, but it does make me wonder with how much scientific stride that we've made over the past couple of years, like why hasn't there been even an attempt at a cure so far? And so it does make you wonder, but yeah, I'm hoping for a cure. I hope it comes in my lifetime.
Well, and is that something you want people to pray about? People that are listening today, I know we have faithful people that will sit down and go, you know, Lord, we want to pray for people who have diabetes and for the research to cure that disease.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think, Jim, it's okay to pray against the greed aspect of this too, you know, with anything in healthcare. I think we can pray against, you know, the companies that are really making a lot of money off of the suffering of others. I think that would be one of my big prayers right now.
Yeah. And again, we're not criticizing people making money, but I just see there's opportunities to cure something and to get rid of it. Man, I hope that people will listen to the Lord and do what they can to get rid of it. Both of you are so gracious. Jennifer Bryant, thank you for joining us today. Abby, I appreciate you. Have a great day.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.